Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 2 of Market or Pitch with your co-host, Yesenia Reynoso. And to my opposite end is the other co-host of this podcast, the ad wizard himself, Corey Davis.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. Hopefully this is your second episode, but if not, please check out our first episode where you can get our introductions and find out that I'm actually not the ad wizard that Yesenia just said, but I appreciate the compliment.
I just laughed at that, Corey. I mean, in my eyes, you are the ad wizard. I mean, there's nothing to hide about that. You definitely bring in, you know, that advertising spice, my friend.
I know. I appreciate that. But I'm pretty sure there's plenty of other people who have way more experience than I do. I'm just a veteran of almost 10 years in the advertising industry, and I'm still learning every single day.
We all have our different sets of chapters and expectations. Let's look at it that way.
Good point.
Well, Corey, I guess both you and I, as well as our audience and everyone else in general, this has been such a whirlwind, especially these last 2 weeks, to say the least.
Yes, the election has been, everything has been all thing elections. Entertainment has been about the election. Of course, politics are about the elections. And advertising and PR are about the elections. We have been entrenched in all things elections. So it's tough to think that we're kind of past the 2020 election season.
I mean, it's to say that in terms of the shock level as to how aggressive this election cycle was, to say that it was an understatement, I will be lying to you. I mean, it really was, you know, on astronomical level, something that we have never seen before. It was literally 24/7 nonstop coverage of election. I mean, you couldn't escape it. It was like as if we were, you know, being trapped like in an elevator, and in this small compartment, and all you can see is typical coverage of the election, you know, left and right, with what both campaigns, you know, have demonstrated over these last several months.
And what made it, to me, what made it even the most 2020 of it all is the fact that we did not find out who won the presidency. Well, I mean, according to our current president, Donald Trump, we still don't know, even though we do. But we didn't find out on election night who won the presidency, which is, I think, is strange. Last in 2016, the last presidential election, we found out it was relatively late, but we found out the same night that Donald Trump defeated Hillary Clinton. I believe with Barack Obama's elections in 2012 and 2008, we found out from the East Coast hour, maybe around 11:10 to 11 p.m. And likewise, so not since the year 2000, this is the first time that we had to wait multiple days to find out who will become our new president.
It kind of felt like it was a turtle, you know, trying to cross that finish line. And he went baby step after baby step. And it was in typical 2020 fashion. No surprise that we ended up waiting 4 days for the results. It was kind of like we were itching to, you know, get to that end. And we didn't get there. It's, you know, and those, you know, that level of anticipation and stress, you know, everything just all came to a head. And, you know, it's absolutely, you know, amazing, you know, despite everything that, you know, that has happened now, you know, the country was literally on the point's edge. You could see everybody being anxious, stressed out. You know who I thought were the big winners this year, Corey? The memes. The internet. I applaud you. Please continue being you, because some of those memes that I saw throughout the social media platforms were in tip-top shape. So applause to our fellow internet individuals who come up with these incredible and hilarious memes. At least you kept us, you know, stress-free while we were all waiting pins and needles for the election of results. And ultimately, when it is all said and done, we ended up having a winner. So congratulations, you know, goes out to our newly elected 46th president of the United States, former vice president, now president-elect Joe Biden, and now Madame Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, who made history in her own right.
Yes. Yes.
After 4 days of waiting for these results.
Yeah, and I think that the fact that we had to wait 4 days, sometimes it was more of the relief that, yes, this is over. We have a new president. Sometimes, at least for myself, I had to take a step back and actually remember that not only do we have a new president, this is history. This is a historic event that we have our first woman of color, Kamala Harris, who's half Black, half South Asian. And she's a woman as vice president. That we have never had that ever in the history of our country. So even beyond the nature of, yes, we have a new president, it's going to be a turnover from a chaotic 4 years. This is historic. So I want to give that appreciation and that shout out to Kamala Harris and just to women and women of color to finally be represented in the highest office.
Absolutely. You know, we've broken, the second highest glass ceiling, you know, with the election of Kamala Harris as VP. But to say, you know, on historical levels, you know, what she has done, you know, is pretty significant on all accounts, you know, especially to all the young little girls, you know, who have big aspirations to becoming president, vice president, or any type of major position, that if you put your heart, your soul, you know, to it, you can become anything. And you know, this is, you know, something, you know, on these levels that we can all take a seat back and, you know, and look behind the significance of it and, you know, and be very proud of it.
Yes. All and right. Can I, and before we move on, can I just say my big winner of all of 2020, this election season, are the American people, are the voters. I don't know if you know this, but nearly 65% of the American population voted in 2020.
Yes.
Which is more so high percentage since 1908. That's, just take a step back. That's huge. Record voter turnout. I'm somebody who is a big voter advocate. I think everyone should vote, not only for presidency, but also down ballot. People need to vote for their mayors, their city councilmen, their school board members, because especially locally, these positions and these elections shape your everyday life. The fact that where your child may go to school, or whether you may get potholes fixed in your street, those local elections mean a lot more sometimes than the presidency. So the level of engagement in 2020, I hope it carries over to 2021 when there's not a big ticket like presidency on the ballot. But yes, this is a huge year for voter turnout, and I'm very happy.
Well said, my friend. I think we can all echo that sentiment. And hopefully this is the beginning of Americans actually being more involved in civics and as well as investing their time to properly research the candidates and vote based on policy, which is key. Hopefully we can, you know, shift that mindset over there to that. So with that, thank you all so much for tuning in to today's episode. Obviously, you already have an idea as to what episode 2 is all about. It is about the election. So let's jump to it. We have a jam-packed show. It's all about the 2020 election. Let's dive into the news headline of the week, where we discuss a current headline from the PR and advertising industries that became significant across spectrums. This week's news headline is from Adweek, titled, "Broadcast TV is the Clear Winner." This was a record year for political ad spending, whereas in other categories, TV political advertising grown exponentially. Corey, I think it's pretty safe to say that broadcast television has certainly made its mark in this election cycle.
Oh, yes, definitely. Where you couldn't, at least in California, so I'm in California, specifically the Los Angeles area, and while we don't get the Joe Biden versus Donald Trump back and forth ads, like a battle state like Pennsylvania or Florida, Arizona will get. In California, we vote on propositions, which are just rules and laws that are going to be decided in our constitution. We get to vote on them. And we have a barrage of just political proposition ads that happen every single ad break. So I couldn't watch local news. I probably would see, especially the 4 or 5 days leading up to election day, I would see only political ads. So I definitely know this had to be a breaking year for just local TV and the broadcast networks with politicals and political dollars going to their networks.
Here are some interesting tidbits that I think everybody ought to know. In terms of the total national ad spending, in near $14 billion. Billion with a B, according to a recent S&P analysis, with TV stations absorbing a significant portion of that pot. Cantor also predicted that this particular election would attract $6 billion across mediums in political ad dollars in June 2019. That is something completely unheard of. And leading up to Election Day, there were some TV networks which watched record-breaking ratings surrounding the political coverage. All of these networks largely saw an opportunity for their own linear networks to shift their views to streaming services. And I'm sure we can all, you know, understand, you know, just how, you know, critical, you know, these broadcast networks, you know, were able to establish those streaming services and being able for viewers to watch all different types of political content, you know, on every portable device through, you know, not only through broadcast television, but also through all of these streaming services that they've produced.
And if I had to say one thing, which I'll talk about this a little later in the show, I think that this will probably be the peak of political spending. If I had to make a bold prediction, this would be the peak in advertising on TV, specifically broadcast networks, because you've seen so much money going into ad spending on TV and on radio, on social media. And what's the ROI? What's the return on investment for that ad spending? If you can spend $1 billion, are you really getting the election results that you wanted if you are a particular party, Democrat or Republican Party? I think that you're going to see a switch from just barrage of just throwing money to TV networks and advertising politicals, and more of a strategy and a shift and advertising smartly. So I definitely think that moving forward, probably in 2022 with House and Senate seats and midterm elections, and 2024, the next presidential elections, I don't think we're going to see as high of ad spending as we probably did in 2020.
This is not over, to say the least. I think what we are seeing is only the beginning. We are, you know, currently experiencing such, you know, election, you know, fatigue and over analysis of absolutely everything. I thought it was particularly interesting, you know, as to how the broadcast networks changed from 4 years ago. I mean, there was, you know, we saw coverage, you know, of all of these, you know, TV networks being absolutely careful in terms as to how they wanted to project the results. They wanted to be 100% sure that all the counts were voted, and they made, you know, so much emphasis on the importance of making sure every vote count, due to the fact that there was so much misinformation that's being spread around regarding voter fraud. So it's not surprising, you know, that both of these presidential campaigns spend approximately 40% of their budgets on broadcast TV advertising, whereas dollars elsewhere flowed to digital channels such as radio and OOH advertising. Ironically enough, Fox, which owns 17 stations, you know, notified audiences that it attracted $969 million in advertising for their most recent quarter. So that tells you right there that most of these advertisements, on top of the fact that it was universal, were specifically targeted in local areas. Those that provided crucial results to the presidential campaign.
Yeah. And I, like I said, I'll talk about this a little later for my ad chat and ad segment, but I definitely think the losers of the election, I give the winners or the voters, the losers of the elections are the people that spent all this money on local TV at politicals, because what effort, how did that actually help them? Well, were the candidates that they advertised locally, did that help them? Or was the local spending really just an anti-Trump kind of messaging, or a anti-Biden messaging?
And with that, my friend, we're going to wrap it up. I think that is going to be something we're going to be, each of us respectively, are going to be diving a little bit more in depth. So that is the end of the news headline of the week.
Yeah, and I just want to say, and I want to hear what our friends listening, what's your opinion on the election? What's your opinion on just advertising spending as a whole? Were you so sick, like all of us, of election season and just of seeing all the barrage of ads coming to you? Or did you like them? Just email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com just so we can just hear your thoughts.
And with that, we seamlessly transition to Corey's ad chat, where Corey talks about a specific marketing theme and gives his perspective. Corey, I believe your chosen topic will be a continuation of our previous discussion. So take it away, my friend.
Yeah, great segue. So hi, everyone. My ad chat for the week, like this whole episode, is about the election and the advertising spending on the campaigns. So coming out this week, Ad Age actually has an article titled, "Did Advertising Fail Democrats?" In the article, they discussed the fact that in the 2020 campaign season, Democrats outspent Republicans by nearly $300 million. Democrats spent a record $1 billion in 2020 political season. $1 billion. Just Democrats, to the tune of nearly $750 million for Republicans, with the hopes of getting the presidency from Donald Trump by electing Joe Biden. They also wanted to win back the majority in the Senate and also gain more House seats so they can even have this air quote blue wave of sort going on in our country. With all the spending by the Democrats, where do we currently stand? Out of the three outcomes the Democrats hold for, which is the presidency, majority in the Senate, and more House seats, only winning the presidency was achieved. Even though Joe Biden is a president-elect, why didn't the massive advertising spending help Democrats in 2020? We're seeing right now that, depending what happens in Georgia, but it looks like the Senate will remain with the Republicans, and the Democrats actually lost House seats in 2020. A record turnout year, the Democrats actually lost House seats in 2020. So if you spend $1 billion, how come you only got the presidency? Ad Age in this article pulls a few theories, and the leading one that the majority of ads for Democrats were clearly more anti-Trump and not pro-Biden or pro-Democrat messaging. And that's probably the biggest sentiment that I agree with. Like the majority of Americans, you already have an opinion of Trump, whether you like him or not. There's plenty of anti-Trump support, but there's plenty of people who are very, not only pro-Trump, but I would say in love with Trump. If you don't like Trump, you didn't need a barrage of ads from Democrats telling you to be anti-Trump. You already had an opinion of him. The negative ads, in my opinion, did more harm than good because it turned off people who might have been undecided, not between Biden or Trump, but undecided if they would even vote at all. There were some people who looked at all these anti-Trump ads and say, well, I don't like either candidate. I definitely don't like Trump, but I'm not hearing anything to make me actually want to go vote for Joe Biden and also vote down ballot for other Democrats. I believe that Democrats would have been better served with a smarter advertising spending strategy. All that money, instead of being spent all directly on anti-Trump, should have been spent on pro-Democratic messaging. Just think, what if the Democrats would have aired on MTV or social media platforms about what's Democrats' position on lowering student loans or eliminating the debt? Or maybe on TikTok about gun control and preventing school shootings. What if the Democrats would have aired their messaging of how they plan to help Black America in the next 4 years on BET or some of the urban platforms? What about the Latinx community? Telemundo, Univision. There's so many different platforms. Instead of just saying Donald Trump is a Nazi, Donald Trump is the Antichrist, they could have just spent that messaging on focusing on pro-democratic positions and pro-democratic issues, where voters would have been better served and better prepared to actually vote for these candidates and be more enthused to vote for these candidates. There was definitely a missed opportunity for Democrats to paint their own narrative that Fox News, frankly, did for them in a negative way. Democrats spent $1 billion, but I will say this, they may be happy that they got the presidency, but in spending $1 billion, they may have lost the American people through local elections as a way of it. So Jess, I want to get you in on this. What are your thoughts on this, or do you think that anti-Trump ads were just effective, at least on you or people in your life, or do you definitely think Democrats should have done a better job of airing different messaging?
this is not a surprise considering the amount of ad dollars that the Democrat Party put into these markets. I mean, these tactics almost cost them the White House and lost ground on the Senate and the House. If you ask me, most of the Democratic ads are basic, based on unity, strength, and leadership, but absolutely nothing on policy. It was evident what the Biden campaign strategy was, which was to tap into those emotions instead of focusing on the policy that would better improve the lives of ordinary Americans. It was all Trump bad, Trump bad, but they inadvertently cast themselves as a bunch of complicit unknowns. And in my head, all I kept thinking is, okay, since you're all anti-Trump, what makes you stand out? What makes you different? What are your values? What's your policy, you know, to, you know, improve the lives of average Americans? And they had absolutely nothing. So what's the point of me, you know, focusing on all this, you know, anti-Trump advertising if you got absolutely no answer from a policy standpoint as to how you're going to best improve my life? And that's where they drop. That's where they drop the ball.
Agree. And when I said that the narrative that Fox News painted for them, Donald Trump actually did better in the Latinx community. His voter participation in the Latinx community increased by 10% versus in 2016 because of Fox News and the right wing painted Democrats as socialists and made them seem like if you're from Venezuela or Cuba or some of these other socialist, air quote socialist countries, that the Democrats' messaging will bring you back to the time where you're in Venezuela and Cuba and some of these other countries. So that kind of scary Democrats and socialism was one thing Democrats never addressed. They never had any messaging actually laying out their plans and know, if you call it socialist, this is what we all want to do. We want to give everyone health care. We want to do these things. Like you just said, they just really just want to highlight that we're not Donald Trump, so vote for us because we're anti-Trump, instead of really just talking about their own issues and why we should be voting for them and what they actually represent.
This is a telling sign for the Democratic Party. And I think this is also an alarm that should be ringing in their head, but they're not going to, because in their minds, it's, you know, it's not our fault. You know, it's, you know, the far left, the radicals, you know, they're the ones, you know, who caused all this mess. But in reality, it's the Democrat Party who shot themselves in the foot. It's understandable, you know, given the circumstances, you know, as to how politicized, you know, this entire, not only this entire election, but also how heavily divided we are as a nation. You know, the Republican Party over the last 50 years have masterfully, you know, learned how to control the media narrative. And so through lies, misinformation, and conspiracy theories, they have been able to basically dominate the airwaves and be able to spin the narratives in their favor, painting the, you know, painting Democrats, you know, as a radical far left party, the socialist party. Oh, they're going to take away your freedoms, etc. When in reality, you know, it's all, you know, it's all fluff. And
I agree.
And, you know, to be perfectly honest, you know, many Americans don't want to hear it. I mean, but in the PR and marketing worlds, this kind of messaging works. It generates reaction. The more people, when they see ads, the more people they engage with it. Currently, because of the fact we are living in a polarized country, heavily divided, we have two factions, two tribes duking it out for political supremacy. Both factions can easily decipher and control a media narrative that can resonate with the base. And I think, you know, from what we have seen, the Republican Party, you know, again, has been able to do it, you know, with flying colors, while the Democrat Party just stays complicit like a bunch of chickens, you know, not, you know, punching back as to, you know, what the, you know, the Republican faction, you know, has put in play.
Agree. And with the Senate seats in Georgia up in play, if the listeners are not familiar right now, that there's a runoff, two runoff elections going on in Georgia. And on January 5th, the Georgians are going to have to vote on two new senators, whether they want to the incumbents who are Republicans or Democrats. And I'm curious to see how Democrats will change their strategy this next month. And will they continue just to spin blindly on anti the Republican messaging, or will they actually have strategy and have messaging that actually details what the Democrats in the Senate plan to do if they win back the majority? I'm hoping that it's the latter.
Newsflash, they have no plan. I think after seeing, you know, what the Democrat Party has come up with, do you honestly think as any American, you know, perhaps maybe I'm wrong. And again, please feel free to email your thoughts. We definitely want to get your intake on this. I think, you know, this is a red flag, you know, for the Democrat Party that, you know, we are seeing a shift in terms as to how people, you know, view the current state. You know, we're seeing, you know, the income inequality, wealth gap widen even more. We're seeing the Democrat Party shifting their focus from not being the party of the working class to the party of the ruling elites. We know that the Republican Party as well is also corrupt in its own shape and form. That's why, you know, I feel we don't have two political parties. We have one party, you know, with two factions, both working in direct correlation, you know, with the ruling elites and serving the interests of themselves and their respective donors. Neither of them are the party of the working people. And if you can honestly think that, you know, the Democrat Party is going to come up with viable solutions such as universal health care, ironically enough, on a Fox News poll, 72% approve Medicare for All, which is the U.S. version for universal health care. And also over 70% of people, you know, support a Green New Deal and basic universal basic income, UBI for short. And yet these are winnable progressive policies that the Democrat Party doesn't want to embrace. So what's the point with me or as well as anybody else, you know, offering our attention, you know, to these political factions if neither of them, you know, specifically doesn't want to, you know, fulfill, you know, the needs of the public, you know, instead they want to fulfill the needs of the donor. So it's kind of like, you know, why should I, you know, pay attention to you? Again, it's not about electing the person. It is now about policy, and Americans need to stop focusing on the individual based on electability and start focusing on policy. What is this political faction or this particular candidate going to be offering you to better improve your life? That's what it's all about at the end of the day. And Americans also, you know, need to start, you know, doing the deep research in terms as to what policies, you know, are going to drastically improve their lives, like the $15 minimum wage. That's, you know, another opportunity they may have. Most of these policies, you know, that Americans want are mainly progressive policies. So, again, unless if these two political factions can get their act together, I'm not seeing it.
No, I think it's just the hope, but I agree. I'm not seeing it at all. And we'll just, like I said, we'll see. Sooner or later, they're going to have to learn and they're going to have to get like the Republicans and get their messaging on point and get their messaging effective enough and simple enough that it appeals to the American people in a simple manner that people actually vote for these progressive issues. It's one thing to want the progressive issues, but if you don't vote, it doesn't make a difference.
And with that, we close Corey's ad chat. If you're interested in offering your thoughts, please comment on our podcasting mediums or via email at marketerpitch.com. Thanks, Corey.
No problem. Thank you.
Right. And we now move on to my PR bulletin board, where I talk about a specific topic within the PR industry that captured my attention and I offer insight. This week, we shift course from TV and broadcast to digital. Digital media played a crucial role in the outcome of this election. We saw major increases in terms of searches and engagement across all social media channels, but there was one particular platform that made itself stand out above the rest and declaring itself the winner of the 2020 season. And no, it's not Facebook. I'm talking about Twitter. The 2020 election season was Twitter's election. The social media company, which for many years left the 45th president post uninterrupted, and has done so since he first announced his candidacy in 2015. Throughout his presidency, Twitter became his go-to platform to keep his followers informed, mainly of his endless lies and conspiracy theories. Also, Twitter became his unofficial media network to stay ahead of the press, given his label for the press as fake news. His Twitter use was obviously prominent, but in 2020, it gave a whole new meaning thanks to the election. Amid the aftermath, Twitter intervened on the president's tweets about voter fraud, mail-in ballots, and baseless claims that he won the election. Twitter kneecapped President Trump's engagement. It also what differentiates Twitter from other platforms such as Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram, according to industry experts. Twitter, like many of these other platforms, uses a combination of technology and human verification to regulate the content, while other platforms asphyxiate contextual labels to the presence on Truthful Posts, so users could seek additional information from reliable sources. The companies did not reduce the post algorithmic speed. The real key and power of these social media platforms comes from the spread of organic content. Twitter has done a better job than these other platforms. In early 2020, Twitter adopted a much stricter policy that were incompatible with 45's online antics. These issues came to a head in the early summer, ranging between May and July, at the peak of the George Floyd protest. To do a compare and contrast, Twitter and Facebook took diverging views about whether or not the president's posts constituted real-life threats of violence against the protesters. The fallout from Facebook's laissez-faire approach led to a hugely massive advertiser boycott and caused the platform to adopt approaches that were mostly resembled Twitter's. After a summer of labeling and restricting Trump's rule-breaking tweets, which just about all of them, to say the least, violated the policies of civic integrity by glorifying violence and spreading COVID-19 misinformation, which, by the way, we are still very much in a real pandemic, among other transgressions, Twitter sharpened its blade ahead of Election Day, and the company expanded its civic integrity policy to include false claims about the election integrity and premature claims of victory. And this was something that the president for the past couple of months kept blabbing about to the media exactly as to what he was going to do, which was to spread false misinformation on claims about voter fraud, mail-in ballots, and any other types of conspiracy theories, to stir up the pot, to make people no longer believe in the institutions and the overall election process. So, Corey, it's evident that Twitter, like many of these social media channels, took evasive measures to keep misinformation at bay. But is it too little too late? Personally, I feel these companies didn't do enough, to be honest. However, we can both agree that Twitter laid down the groundwork to finally do something about it. And again, as much as we want to, look Twitter as, the king or the winner of this election cycle, I think in the end, they, as well as Facebook and these other platforms, didn't do enough in terms of stopping the president, but more importantly, stop the amount of misinformation that constantly kept flowing, through these platforms. There was not enough protocols and regulation, to stop the spread of false misinformation.
Can I just give a round of applause to Twitter for finally stepping up in 2020 and actually doing what they should have been doing 4 years ago. For me, Twitter is the winner of the election season. And when I say the winner of the social media election season. Twitter really took a step up from what Facebook is doing. They took a step off from what Snapchat and all those social media platforms was doing and actually put their foot down and started regulating their own platform. It was actually nice seeing, for me, I'm sorry, I didn't have to cut you off, but it's actually nice seeing when I see a Donald Trump tweet, a misinformation tweet, which is these days are 95% of them, seeing a disclaimer underneath them about what he's saying is misinformation. It's nice going to seeing different tweets. And I know them because I can study and I do research. So I know when I see a fake news or fake tweets or misinformation, what they are. But there's a lot of people out there who think the president is saying something or maybe think someone in the administration is saying something. And they believe it because why would they lie? It's nice having Twitter being a regulator in the election season and saying this information is not true. And if you want to learn more, click this link. I definitely think that Twitter is finally starting to step up and kind of right the wrongs that they've done. Because if you look at it, Twitter kind of made Donald Trump. Without Twitter, there will be no Donald Trump. Donald Trump, like you said so eloquently, was able to use Twitter as his base, as his platform. He could bypass the press, talk directly to his base, talk directly to his people, and get his messaging out there, which made it very, I would say, which made him very sexy to his followers, because you felt that you could talk to the president directly. He was retweeting people. So you could be somebody at a farm in Iowa and retweet some kind of racist messaging, or even just retweet something about what's going on in your town that's pro-America. Trump could retweet that. He made the presidency himself seem very accessible, which made him a tool, a force to be reckoned with. So Twitter let a lot of his, I call a lot of his bullshit, let it go through the past 4 years, because they didn't want to ruffle the feathers. Twitter looked at themselves as a revenue-making company, similar to what Facebook has done, and they saw that revenue was more important than regulation. Now, it's looking like Jack Dorsey, who runs Twitter, is switching that mindset. He's feeling that regulation and doing right by the American people is more important than revenue, and I'm very happy that Twitter actually has stepped up. But you're right, they should have done it a long time ago, but this is the first step.
It's step number one, in the hopes that Twitter, along with these Facebook platforms, actually do something in terms of putting up stricter protocols among the spread of misinformation. It's good that, yes, Twitter took the first step in actually labeling the tweets, and it was evident, especially throughout these two weeks, as to how they put that disclaimer up whenever Trump or any of his pundits, spread their lies. I think he has also in some aspects has emboldened his people to actually, spread those conspiracy theories far and wide. You know, the thing with these social media platforms is that, information can spread within 3 nanoseconds, and conspiracy theories and lies along those avenues can spread 6 times as much, if not more, than the truth. And so we are witnessing, an era where fake news, as the president, likes to call it, has become so entrenched that we obviously don't know what the truth is anymore. And the platforms, have not done much, in regulating that information. Yes, I think, from Twitter's standpoint, their platform has risen in astronomical levels due to the fact that Trump has used it as his unofficial broadcast network, in order to bypass the media and be able to directly talk with his followers. But we're also seeing that now with Twitter, tying the screws up a little bit, most of his supporters are now leaving Twitter because they feel that it is mostly, it's censoring, their rights. But I think it's what it comes down to. It's common sense. Everybody by now should know that you should not be, be spreading these types of lies. I think it's, it's pretty interesting to see, the transformation, as to how far Twitter has changed over these last 4 years. Have basically become, like the go-to stop, for everything Trump, but also, the spread of misinformation, though now Facebook has taken up that mantle because it is now the breeding ground, for far right information.
I agree. And the reason I'm just so happy with Twitter, and I think it's just because I look at what Twitter's doing versus what Facebook is doing. And this week, Facebook just announced that they're extending their political ban, their own political ads, for another month. But that's just a bare minimum. Mark Zuckerberg kind of wanted to play the both sides kind of fence. He didn't really want to piss off conservative, and he didn't want to piss off progressive, which made it worse because he allowed that a lot of right-wing material and a lot of disinformation and a lot of false information filter through the network and proclaim that it's not our place as a social media company to regulate speech and regulate the media. But I actually think it is. Facebook did a really big disservice in 2016, and it wasn't until Mark Zuckerberg had a lot of advertisers actually leave Facebook because of his indecisiveness and indecision in 2020 that they finally did the bare minimum. But I definitely think Facebook has a lot of work to do. And hopefully that for the next midterm in 2022 and 2024 presidential election, they'll take a page out of Twitter's book and actually start combating and regulating some of the hate speech going on their platform.
It's all about the policies, my friend, and we are very much going to be keeping an eye on all of these platforms as we head to into the 2022, I should say, midterms and the 2024 presidential elections. And don't forget, we do have a runoff at Georgia on January 5th for two open seats, which could very well decide the Senate. So this is not over by any means necessary. So we're going to be keeping an eye, you know, as to, you know, what they do, because at the end of the day for them, it's all about the engagement, which turns into money. And as long as these posts, you know, continue to spread, you know, which in return helps them produce the money, they're going to continue with this laissez-faire approach. But hopefully a light bulb gets clicked in their head that it's time for, you know, for them to, you know, make these changes.
Agreed.
All right. And with that, we put a bow on it. We end the PR bulletin board segment. If you have any opinions about this subject, again, comment on our podcast mediums or email us at marketerpitch@gmail.com. We definitely want to hear your thoughts. We definitely want to hear your opinions. And with that, we come to the end of our show, the 2020 Election of Chaos. Corey, final thoughts.
No, final thoughts is voter turnout was up. I'm happy. How about you?
I think I've never seen an election cycle this crazy before. So I will definitely leave it at that.
Okay.
And for that, thanks to everyone for tuning in. Don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Marketer Pitch can be found on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Podcast Chaser, and other podcast platforms. See you all next time for episode 3. Till then, goodbye, all.